or slits, pint or mince, will Guido throw a no-no? Who's on the Guido wire? If someone can help me, the guys will tell me. Or should I take a flyer on a minor leaguer or pick up a streamer?
It's Monday, March 13th. Welcome to the show. It's Sleeper and Breakout Week. If you want to send us your sleepers and breakouts, email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And put sleepers or breakouts in the subject line. I'm Adam Azer. Yo, Chris Towers, let's go to you first. What up, Chris?
Hey, Adam. How's it going?
Going pretty well. Very excited. Heath Cummings, hello, sir.
Hello.
I'm looking forward to hearing about the World Baseball Classic, but how about we start out with a couple of sleepers and breakouts?
Okay.
All right. From the listeners.
I didn't bring any.
No, you don't have to. This is all listener-generated material. By the way, sleepers and breakouts and busts 2.0 will be coming out very soon on CBSSports.com. All right, Griffin's going to start us off with Dear Chuck, EJ, and Kenny. Yeah, I like it. This might be the homer in me, being that I'm from San Diego, but I think Austin Hedges could have a huge season. Hedges was great last year in AAA. Good spring training. What do you guys think about Austin Hedges as a sleeper?
I think he's an excellent sleeper choice. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to hit, but he's barely even being drafted. He's been a top prospect. He hit well in the minors. There's plenty of opportunity in San Diego. Why not?
Okay. Yeah, worth taking a flyer on as your number two catcher. I don't think I would ever touch him in a league where only 12 catchers get drafted, but he's put up great numbers in the Pacific Coast League, but not really anywhere else, and I think that's the bigger concern, more than the major league numbers, is that just his numbers, even in double A, are pretty mediocre.
Would you guys take a shot on Hedges or Devin Mesoraco?
Probably Mesoraco.
Yeah, I don't. Probably. Like, it probably makes more sense to do Hedges because Mesoraco is probably going to get dropped by whoever drafts him in April because he's playing like twice a week.
Okay. How about Hedges or Zunino?
Hedges.
I would rather have Zunino.
Okay, great. Glad we can come to consensus. Here's another email. This is from Nicholas. He's got a breakout for us. He says Drew Pomerantz is going to have his breakout season. And, of course, Pomerantz, kind of broke out last year. But Nicholas, I think he thinks he's going to do it for a full season. Pomerantz was great last year, 2.47 ERA with San Diego. In 102 innings, he struck out 115. But then with Boston, 4.59 ERA and a 1.37 WHIP in 68 and two-thirds. Pomerantz just kind of wore down, it looked like. He also had some elbow issues. He had a stem cell injection in his elbow after the season. Do you think Drew Pomerantz could have a full breakout season this year?
I'm not drafting him with that expectation. I think it's possible based on what he showed, but I'm not excited about it.
He's one of those high variance pitchers you take in the later rounds of the draft. He could post a low 3 ERA and strike out more than a batter per inning, and I think that'd be your full breakout. Or he could just be a complete disaster and have Tommy John surgery in May.
Or he could pitch out of the bullpen. It's not even a certainty that he's going to be in the rotation. And this just gives me a chance to talk about Eduardo Rodriguez, who had a good outing yesterday. And in the final 14 starts of the season after the All-Star break, Rodriguez had a 3.24 ERA. He struck out a batter per inning. He gave up only 7 home runs in 77 and two-thirds. Opponents hit 210, slugged 329 against Eduardo Rodriguez in those 14 starts. And this is a guy who had a dislocated right knee in spring training last year, lost velocity with altered mechanics when he came back. So I've been on it for a while. I nominated him for a dollar last week. He went for two. I didn't get him. But I think Eduardo Rodriguez also breakout potential, guys. And I just wonder, I feel like Scott agrees with me. I don't know about you two. I don't know about Kreith.
Yeah, I think he definitely has breakout potential. It's just, at this point, not knowing which one of them, if either is going to be in the rotation, just makes it hard for me to buy in yet.
I guess. So between... Okay, so you have Sale and Porcello, obviously. Wright's going to start the year on the DL. It's not Wright. Price is going to start the year on the DL. So they're all going to get a shot, right?
I think so. I would guess they both make starts
In
April, but they just have an exceptionally short leash.
Right. depending on when Price comes back, which we don't know. All right, well, that was fun. A little sleeper and breakout talk to start the show. Let's do some small talk. How you guys doing? How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. I went to the beach on Saturday for several hours and got sunburned for the first time in 2017.
Okay.
And then went to the World Baseball Classic and got to watch some indoor convention-style baseball, which was it was good. Danny Duffy looked pretty dominant.
Yeah, look, I mean, it was nice that they crushed Canada. Officially moved on to the second round, Team USA?
Yes.
Officially moved on to the second round.
I was very disappointed Saturday night. Like, I was into that game, and Andrew
Miller,
it sucked.
That ending, I mean, Nelson Cruz, really good.
I don't think
Nelson Cruz has fallen off yet.
That was one of the worst appearances as a reliever that Andrew Miller has ever had.
You were disappointed Saturday night?
I was, yeah.
Drew Butera does a barrel roll from 14 feet away from home plate into Salvador Perez's knees.
There's some Kerrigan potential there.
It's the dumbest
backup catcher
I've
takes
seen.
Out the starter. I don't know.
Like, I would not cut Drew Butera because I thought he maliciously tried to take out Salvador Perez. I would cut him for being dumb enough to try that move.
You know, the injuries are a major story right now. We've got Ian Desmond, we have Jason Kipnis, we have Anthony DeSclafani, we have Salvador Perez and Francisco Rodriguez. We have Corey Seager with an oblique injury. So that's going to be a big part of today's show, talking about those values. But yeah, look, World Baseball Classic has been really fun. I had to
leave a family outing on Friday early because I was with my wife's family. They're all Venezuelan, and I am, of course, as everyone knows, Puerto Rican. During the Puerto Rico Venezuela game, when Puerto Rico mercy ruled Venezuela, I had to take off before things got really ugly.
I can't imagine like you being ungracious as a winner.
I wasn't ungracious.
It was just everybody else's problem.
They were just mad. Yeah.
Okay. So it didn't have anything to do with you.
No.
You know, I'm not sure if anybody saw what I said on Twitter, and I wasn't going to bring this up on the air, but now I guess I'm going to because I wanted to bring it up off the air to have a laugh with you guys about it, but I forgot. So I'm just going to say, like,
can we do a new segment where you just, it's called, did you see my tweet?
Did you see my tweet? Yeah, I'm not like a huge tweeter, but
Can we do an entire show for me?
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah, you're always in the, while you were away or in case you missed it, section of my newsfeed. So anyway, what I was saying, Matt Vasgersian, he says some really weird things on the air, like really suggestive adult things on the air. And just read my tweets, because I can't even say some of them on the podcast, but I don't really understand how he's able to get away with it. But for example, like, Nolan Arenado did not hit a home run yesterday. He hit a Johnson. He called it a Johnson. Like, I've never heard that, ever. 25 years of watching baseball, I've never heard that. And that was, like, the most tame of the three things, or the four things. Actually, the other one that I could say was that guys don't get warmed up in the bullpen. They get hot. So David Robertson getting hot. Like, nobody says that. Why are you saying that?
That's less weird than Johnson.
No, getting hot is definitely a thing.
No.
Rex Hudler is kind of known for this as well. If you search on Twitter things Rex Hudler says, several things. One comment about the bodies you would see when showering with the pitchers. Oh man,
that's not a
drain.
That's not a person you want to be modeling your broadcasting style after. Like,
Rex?
I'm sorry, yeah, Rex is ridiculous. We've had this discussion before. He's ridiculous.
Your job is to be entertaining while discussing a baseball game.
Well, I'll give him that. He's entertaining. All right, so let's get down to business here. We'll talk about the injuries. Also, the bracket challenge has begun. I created the group. You have to follow me on Twitter, or you can email us if you're not on Twitter, if you just hate me and don't want to follow me, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I will send you a link to the bracket challenge. We have over 100 people so far, created it last night. We want to get to 1,000. If you're in the lead by the end of the, going into the Sweet 16. Wait, what is it? I think after
at the end of the Sweet 16.
You made the rules, so you can't ask anyone else what the rules are.
I forgot. If you have the lead at a certain point, which I will figure out before the end of the podcast, you will get in the podcast league. And that could be a football podcast league entrance, depending on which podcast you listen to, but hopefully it'll be a baseball person. Want you to play on CBSSports.com. Go to CBSSports.com/baseball and sign up for your fantasy league. And we got a lot of other podcasts right now. If you want to listen to like the college basketball podcast, Eye on College Basketball, they'll help you fill out your bracket. Just go to CBSSports.com/podcast. And also, Aaron from Wisconsin, trying to get back into the podcast league, offered to buy Heath several rides on the Milwaukee home run slide for $100, I believe, on a weekday. If you make the trip out there, he will buy you the trips on the slide, and that means we have to put him in the podcast league, which I can't do because he's already been in. But you have that standing offer.
But the offer is only if I can get him in the podcast league.
I mean, it's kind of... I'd make an exception, but I really don't.
Like, I choose. I have a little more control over who gets into the rejects league, I feel like.
Yeah.
So maybe I could help him get into the rejects league. Man, me sliding down the slide in Miller Park, what a sight.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
Yes.
Didn't know you could just purchase that. All right. To the injuries. An email from Jake in KC. Dear Fred, Barney, Dino, and Bam Bam. What are you doing in your rankings with Kipnis, Desmond, and DeSclafani? P.S. Please discuss which one of you is each of those Flintstones characters. I don't really know the Flintstones. The Flintstones.
Yeah. I'm the biggest guy, so I would say I'm Fred.
I think I'm Bam Bam.
Okay, I'll be Barney.
Yeah. And Scott can be the dinosaur.
I think Adam's Dino.
Why?
Hey, you're a little, you know. No comment.
I suck?
No.
Is it a vacuum
Dino's
cleaner?
Great. Everyone loves Dino.
Oh, okay. All right, so what are we doing with Jason Kipnis, the number 9 second baseman in fantasy last year in points, number 10 in Roto, had a setback with his shoulder, will not be ready for opening day.
I had already dropped him just a little bit. Below like the Zobrist, below Pedroia. I've got him 14th. I don't like the tier of second baseman right below him is Devin Travis and Jonathan Scope. I don't think I'm going to drop him below them.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll leave him at 14th.
Chris,
yeah, I think I've got him at 15th. I know I'm higher, especially in Roto, on Scope than anyone else in the office. But yeah, it's going to be tough for him coming out, starting the season with an injury, to get into what looks like a really strong top 11, at least at second base, if not, you know, top 14.
I'd say in a 1 second baseman league, you know, no middle infield spot, if you want to draft Kipnis, put him on your DL, and then maybe draft like Logan Forsyth later, I'd be fine with that. Of course, I kind of like Forsyth, but I feel like you'll be able to plug someone in for the... It might just be a few weeks with Kipnis. Like, it's only March 13th, and it's really just... It seems to be a throwing injury, because they had him in the lineup hitting, right? He just wasn't fielding?
There are... If you wanted to go that route, there are... I think plenty of second basemen that I'd feel comfortable filling in for a few weeks if Kipnis becomes enough of a value.
Yeah, so, right, that's the thing. So, you know, don't be too afraid to draft him if you can just find another second baseman and plug him in. But certainly Kipnis going down in the rankings now. And look, they are kind of downplaying it. They're saying, we just want him to get 100% healthy. It's not a huge deal, but you just never know. And shoulders are annoying. And Kipnis has injury history, too, so this stinks. Ian Desmond. Ian Desmond was the number 9 outfielder in fantasy in points leagues, number 7 in Roto. He's been 20-20 in 4 of the last 5 seasons. Desmond broke his hand after he was hit by a pitch. What's an estimate? I saw what Scott wrote up yesterday, thinking maybe early May, after you miss some time, you go on a rehab assignment, maybe he's back in a little less than 2 months from now. Does that seem realistic to you that Desmond misses about a month?
Yeah, I think that's like the worst case scenario.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the worst case scenario. I mean, broken hand, you figure, what, 6 weeks probably?
Yeah, it could
be. 4 to 6.
Yeah, I mean, right now we don't have a specific timetable. He's just out indefinitely, right?
Yes, so they he's going to see a hand specialist, Desmond,
the
so
thing
we don't know.
I
wouldn't expect to see him in April in the majors.
The thing I like about this is they'll go take a look at it. We'll get a timetable, and it's probably going to be pretty accurate. Like, we've pretty much figured out how to fix bones and how long they take to heal.
Yeah, but this is the kind of, you know, we see this a lot with hand injuries, with hitters especially. You try to come back a little too early, or you don't come back. You come back and it's healed, but you're not fully healthy.
But like, what's it? What? It's better than, in my opinion, some type of muscle injury that's going to take a month to heal.
Sure.
It's better than a foot.
Yeah, but it's, that's, yeah.
It's like, it's one of the better types of injuries.
But we're still talking about, I think hand injuries for hitters tend to be trickier than I think you're assuming.
Well, I've always been afraid of wrist injuries. I hate wrist injuries. I don't know. Right. You know, broken hand, I wasn't sure if that was a little bit different. But,
well, I think wrist injuries a lot of times are tendons and stuff like that.
Well, let's talk about where we're drafting Ian Desmond at this point. Like, would you be drafting Jackie Bradley ahead of Ian Desmond?
No.
So if Desmond was like a round 5 pick, maybe round 6 before, I should probably just pull up average draft position, right?
I was just saying, Roto, I had him as a round 4.
Okay.
But I think
he was going 51 overall.
All right, so that's early round 5. Where is he now? What round in a 12-team league are you thinking about Ian Desmond?
If he falls to the 7th, I'm going to feel great about it.
Wow. Okay.
I think you have to downgrade him more. Assuming he misses a month, you're already looking at what, a ceiling of 130 games. That's assuming he comes back, doesn't miss any more time, stays healthy, is productive, which isn't necessarily a guarantee given how inconsistent we've seen Ian Desmond be over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, 7th round is Kyle Schwarber range. We get a ceiling of 140 games on him.
Sure. I would probably drop him closer to the 90 to 100 range.
Now, Scott wrote about how this would affect the lineup and basically says Gerardo Parra is in now.
Right.
And that's a good point. And I think, you know, Parra was so bad for Colorado last year. He batted .253. He slugged .399. He stole 6 bases in 102 attempts. But maybe he could bounce back. I mean, he's only 29 years old. He'll be 30 in May. So Gerardo Parra, is he draftable in a 5 outfielder league?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. He's a nice 5th outfielder.
Puig or Parra?
I'd still rather have Puig.
Probably Puig.
How about Jacoby Ellsbury or Parra?
Probably Parra.
Probably still Ellsbury.
Ellsbury, okay. Ellsbury for Chris, Parra for Heath. That's Ian Desmond. Let's go to Anthony DeSclafani. Do we have to talk about Mark Reynolds? Do you guys want to draft Mark Reynolds at all?
Nope.
Okay.
Be a fine DFS play against lefties.
There you go. DeSclafani. I actually don't think Reynolds was good against lefties last year. I think he had strange splits, if I remember correctly.
That's fine.
DeSclafani has elbow soreness. He's going to start the year on the DL. He had a 3.28 ERA last year and a 1.216 whip in 123 and a third. Heath said on Twitter, DeSclafani not draftable, right?
I'm done with him.
Chris?
I'll pick him up with a waiver wire in May.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, not exactly a high-end guy anyway. All right, so cool. We covered those 3 big injuries, but there's more. Here's a tweet from Ben Hoffman. Ben says, seems in every mock I'm coming across the Corey Seager-Carlos Correa decision. With Seager's oblique injury mystery, does Correa now have a slight edge over Corey Seager?
I guess only because of the injury.
I think I had them back-to-back as it was. So it's pretty easy to just say I'd rather have Correa now.
I had Seager 6 spots ahead of Correa. We've already seen Seager play at that level. That's the big difference for me. How serious do we think this injury is right now?
I hate oblique injuries.
I do too.
Yeah, they're terrible for hitters. They tend to linger. But he's in the spring. There's no need to push it. There's 3 weeks until opening day. It seems like it will probably be okay by that point, in which case I'd rather have Seager.
Yeah, now here's the thing. Like, Correa, you know, Correa's 2015 was not much worse than Seager's 2016. I think no. you look at their numbers so far, what they've done in the majors. Is it fair to say we expect a better batting average, maybe a lot better from Corey Seager than Correa?
Yes.
We expect a better batting average for sure. I don't know if I would say, like, is the difference between 300 and 280 a lot?
Yeah.
But no, but I mean, the difference between 320 and 270 is a lot. And you know,
I don't expect Seager to necessarily be a 320 hitter.
If you think his true talent level is 300 and the other guys is, and that's understating the difference between them so far. Because right. In 184 games, Seager's been a 312. Correa's been 276 in 252 games. If that's the difference, that's a significant difference.
Yeah, I don't think that Seager will be a true 360 BABIP guy.
Okay.
Right. I would probably put him closer to 300.
Well, my point is, like, well, let's give Seager batting average. But home runs? I feel like Correa's going to out-homer him. You think it'll be close?
I think it'll be close.
And then steals should go to Correa.
Yeah. There's no reason to think otherwise.
I'm not sure why we would give home runs to Correa.
Well,
at all.
I mean, look, it's true. Last year was disappointing. It depends what you buy into, because Correa hit 22 home runs in 99 games in 2015. Then he had his little sophomore slump, and he hit 20 home runs in 153 games last year. So you're right. I shouldn't just jump to the conclusion.
He's got 1 year with a better home run pace than Seager and 1 year with a worse.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a sophomore slump. I think he just kind of reverted to the mean there. I think he had a really good half season the first year.
But, I mean, he's an elite prospect, elite talent.
So is Corey Seager.
Yeah, I know, but I just...
Like, he's not any more of an elite prospect than Corey Seager.
I expect Carlos Correa to be closer to 280, 345, 512 than 270, 360, 451.
Is okay. That his
like I think the 233 ISO was closer to his true talent than the 177. Maybe it's not. But I'd expect an ISO above 200.
Yeah, oh, I would say stolen bases is the only place that I would really expect a big edge, and I think I would probably take Seager. I don't know, maybe not the RBI just because of where Seager's going to bat in the lineup, but I think I just think Seager's the better hitter.
Okay, that's fine. By the way, did you know that Seager was number 5 in points, number 7 in roto at shortstop last year? Isn't that crazy? 308, yeah. 26 on runs, and I think a big part of it is they only stole 3 bases. I talk about this all the time. It's actually at this position, it's a major disadvantage when you compare them to the rest of the position because you've got VR in there, you've got Segura in there, Bogaerts stole 13 bases, could steal more. Correa stole 13 bases, could steal more. Seager only stole 3 last year. Lindor stole 19.
And Seager didn't run much in the minors either.
Yeah. I don't know that it should scare you off or anything, but it's just kind of interesting. Okay, more news and notes. Pittsburgh placed Jung-Ho Kang on the restricted list, so he is not going to start the season with the big league club. It seems unlikely. Kang still hasn't gotten his visa. And yeah, it's kind of a murky situation. What's your take on Jung-Ho Kang right now?
It's impossible to say.
I've drafted him on one team. That's probably enough exposure for me for this year. I probably won't draft him on anymore.
He definitely needs to be drafted in every league. He's got really big upside. But there's a chance he gives you nothing.
Baltimore signed Pedro Alvarez. He's going to play the outfield. This is not a regular player. It's actually a minor league deal. So, yeah, it's more of a daily play. Washington plays Derek Norris on waivers. He's not great, but he could be two-catcher relevant. So if Derek Norris catches on to another team, becomes a starter, how would you compare Norris to Austin Hedges?
Worse than.
Okay.
Salvador, I guess just because Hedges has relative upside.
Salvador Perez has a knee contusion, but he should be okay. And Francisco Rodriguez got hurt on the same play in that crazy sequence. He has a groin injury. It may have been a cramp. They're saying that K-Rod is just fine. Chris Tillman had a setback with his shoulder. He's going to begin the season on the DL. And JT Realmuto played some first base for Miami in spring training. Are they going to get him some extra at-bats? JT Realmuto, that would be huge for his catcher value.
That is the plan, from what I understand. They're going to give Justin Bour an opportunity to hit against lefties, and then when he doesn't, The plan appears to be to let AJ Ellis catch against lefties, and JT Realmuto will play first base.
An absolutely enormous development.
Potentially.
Oh, it's a big time thing here. Now, he's already the sixth catcher off the board on in ADP. Yeah. Woo, wow. Realmuto, that's pretty
That's high. Why I'm not sure it's that big of a development. I think he's being overdrafted right now.
Yeah.
He already played in 137 games last year, so I don't know how much more playing time there is.
He may be the most overdrafted catcher.
Oh, by the way, I just saw this. AJ Pollock left yesterday's game with groin tightness. It was precautionary, but we'll keep an eye on AJ Pollock. I didn't realize that Realmuto was going sixth. He's certainly not the sixth catcher off the board in our drafts. He's after Gattis. He's after Salvador Perez. Probably after Yasmani Grandal. But considering playing time has always been sort of an issue with Grandal, at this point, who are you going to take, Grandal or Realmuto?
Grandal.
Grandal.
10 out of 10 times.
Yeah, you know, in a two-catcher league, Well, certainly in an NL-only league, I actually did take Realmuto over Grandal because Grandal is so injury-prone. But if you're in a one-catcher league and you can sort of replace guys off waivers, then yeah, it makes sense to go upside.
I just, like, I don't know what JT Realmuto is going to do this year that he didn't do last year. He's going to have to do something, though.
Well, let me see where he finished
last year. He's not going to hit 300 again.
Realmuto last year was the number 9 catcher in points leagues, number 10 in Roto. What did he hit last year?
303 with a 357 BABIP.
And how many home runs?
11.
Okay, so
I guess, like, you would expect if...
No, I was wrong.
If he plays a lot, his RBI will come up. 48 from last year was pretty unlucky, but...
Yeah. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong thing. He was number 9 and number 10 in 2016. I'll tell you where Realmuto was, or 2015, rather. In 2016, he was... Better, much better. Sixth in points, fifth in Roto. Yeah, thought so. So that's the thing, Heath. I mean, at-bats are just so important at the position.
Right. I think he's going to lose a lot of points from several of those singles, so he's going to do something else to match that performance.
Okay. Let's talk about something awesome here. Look, it's March Madness time. It's spring training time. Baseball's right around the corner. NBA playoffs. You need tickets. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be way too complicated. There's a better, simpler way to buy. That's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. And SeatGeek is the way to save $20 on your first purchase with our promo code FANTASY, all caps. You buy tickets on SeatGeek, use the code FANTASY, you're getting a $20 rebate. Now, here's why you're going to keep using SeatGeek after you've gotten your rebate and every time you need tickets, because SeatGeek saves you time and money. What else do you need? SeatGeek searches multiple ticket sites. You're going to get better results, and you get price comparison. You're going to see the best deals. That's how I get tickets now, always with SeatGeek, and I always get a bargain. And every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Now go get your $20 rebate. Download the SeatGeek app. Use the promo code FANTASY. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app. Use the promo code FANTASY. You can also go to SeatGeek.com. Hey, we got a potential Miami-Kansas round two matchup.
Yes, I appreciate the committee giving Kansas a clear path to the Sweet 16.
Miami's beaten Duke and UNC this year.
Duke's garbage.
Duke, yeah, they're garbage. They won the best conference in the country postseason.
Nah, Nick Costos says it's like basically guaranteed that they are going to win the NCAA tournament.
Duke? Yeah, I don't
so
know
So I think
that.
We may have to... have a discussion about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure who I'm going to pick, but it won't be Miami, I'll tell you that. All right.
Of all my contrarian sports opinions, I think my most contrarian opinion is that I feel nothing towards Duke. Like, I just don't dislike them at all.
I used to really like Duke when I was growing up, you know.
Makes perfect sense.
Well, they were Leitner.
Like, that's not surprising at all. You are Duke fan.
No, I wasn't a Duke fan. I was always a Miami fan, even when they were 0-16 in the Big East. I'm a diehard fan, but I like Duke, you know, because when I grew up, they were Duke. But
yeah, and then they're on TV more than Andy Griffin.
But well, I've never seen that show because, you know, I'm only 32. But what I was going to say is once Miami joined the ACC and started playing against Duke, and you see, like, Mike Krzyzewski freaking out at the referees all the time and – it's like, come on, dude, you don't need another advantage. I started to hate Duke Once my team started competing against Duke, you realize how hateable they are.
Getting beat by Duke.
Yeah, I don't
know. Miami does really well against Duke. It's not that. They do great against
Duke. Tyler Hansbrough, feel nothing towards Grayson Allen.
Oh, I hated Hansbrough. And Grayson Allen, like, shouldn't even be playing.
Hansbrough was North Carolina.
Ah, see? That shows you how little I care about Duke.
Oh, yeah, I thought you were
Although,
saying.
Like, doesn't he seem like the most Duke player ever?
Kind of, yeah. Okay.
Except Grayson Allen's clearly the most Duke player.
Grayson Allen's the worst. All right, let's get to some spring training storylines here. And then we have some rankings disputes and your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I'm just picking out some names. And the thing about spring training is, especially with pitching stats, you have to realize that a lot of the best hitters are playing in the World Baseball Classic right now. So you see some really good pitching lines, and the stats are still skewed. But I'm just going to throw out some names, guys who are having good springs. You tell me your reaction. San Diego outfielder Jabari Blash. He is tied with Bryce Harper for the most home runs in spring training. Blash has 6 walks and 7 strikeouts, which is nice. He did not do much last year in a little cameo with the Padres, but is Jabari Blash moving toward your fantasy radar?
Before you answer, Jabari Blash incorporated a toe tap into his swing.
Okay, I appreciate that. I think Jabari Blash is fighting for his career right now, because I believe he lost his spot on the 40-man this offseason.
He did.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So he's just trying to get a spot somewhere. They've got too many young outfielders. He's not young anymore. I don't believe Jabari Blash is relevant.
Okay. How about Mitch Haniger? Is he getting more mixed league relevant to you? He doubled in now 3 straight games. Haniger, I believe, is leading spring training and batting average, .448. He has 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. But Haniger's having a great spring.
Chris Towers, before you answer, I need you to answer in your most excited Scott White impersonation.
Nobody can see it, but I'm rocking back and forth.
Okay. Yes.
No, Mitch Haniger, based on what he did at AAA last season, it was the Pacific Coast League, but he had a near 1,100 OPS. I believe he's one of those guys who has reworked his swing to incorporate more lift. I think he's definitely someone at the end of a mixed league draft who is worth a look now.
All right.
I needed more enthusiasm and optimism.
Look, I was rocking, I took my time, I clapped my hands. I don't know what more Scott White you want from me.
He is a hard impression. Like, how do you impersonate Scott White? There's nothing to impersonate.
I've never really thought of it.
No, it's not a thing.
Like, I know the mannerisms I can do, but the... He does, like, yeah, he does that, right?
Sometimes, yeah. Well, you know, if you really want to do a Scott White impression, then why don't we just have Heath be really mean to Chris?
Would be a change.
Yeah, that would make Chris Scott White. Sorry, Heath, that was a joke. You're not mean. Just
Heath's mean to everyone.
All right, no, but like it's getting real here for Haniger. And would you like at this point? Would you rather have Haniger? I'll go back to Yasiel Puig. Haniger or Puig?
Probably still Puig.
Puig.
Really? Like, there's no way I'd take Ellsbury over him. Please don't say Ellsbury over Haniger.
I'm not drafting Jacoby Ellsbury.
Me either.
So there's nobody you're going to ask me that I'm going to say I would take Jacoby Ellsbury over.
Keon Broxton or Haniger?
Broxton.
Haniger.
Hey, that's a Scott White impression. You just said Haniger. That's all you have to do. All right. Pablo Sandoval having a good spring. And you know what? 2 guys that are both having good springs and both coming back from torn labrums in their shoulders. Sandoval and Greg Bird. And I think Greg Bird is really worth talking about here because he's hitting so well in spring that they may not platoon him. He might play against lefties at this point.
What seems like years ago, but I think it was just like a month ago, when I wrote the Yankees team outlook, I talked about how Bird actually had better power numbers in the minors than Gary Sanchez.
Oh, Brian Cashman said, and this actually took me by surprise, that Greg Bird was their best prospect.
He was a better power prospect for sure than Sanchez.
Yeah, that surprised me.
And
he's left-handed.
The thing that I struggle with Greg Bird is he had pretty solid power numbers once he got called up, but they weren't great in the minors.
No, neither were Sanchez.
Right, but that's a different thing than the relative value of Greg Bird as a hitter. And I viewed him more as like a, this is kind of a random comparison, but like a John Olerud type. Someone who should have really good control of the strike zone, but maybe tops out at 25 homers.
Yeah, but John Olerud probably could have hit 30 at Yankee Stadium.
Maybe. I guess that would be the difference. If he can hit lefties and play every day.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of wish I could take back my Josh Bell $2 bid. I got Bell as my corner infielder for $2. I think at this point I'd rather have Bird. You guys?
I think they're pretty close.
Yeah. You know, maybe in an OBP league you favor Greg Bird. He had a pretty good on-base percentage. He had actually 395 on-base percentage in the minors.
See, that's where I think Greg Bird's going to be really good. I think he'll walk a decent amount.
But Bell, well, I know Bell had more walks than strikeouts. Is he a big walk guy?
I believe he was in the minors.
Okay, I'm going to look it up right now. But yeah, no, look, I think the important thing with spring training is you can't necessarily buy the numbers, but I do buy that Greg Bird is healthy. I buy that he's over the shoulder. He says he feels great. Yeah. He actually said the shoulder was bothering him in 2015 when Bird made his major league debut and hit .261 with 11 home runs in 46 games.
He walked a lot in the minors, by the way.
Who, Bell?
Yeah, he was about 13-14% walk rate.
Yeah, they both walked a lot, so that's good. All right, so look, it's definitely a viable corner infield play. Who's better in a vacuum, Greg Bird or Pablo Sandoval?
Greg Bird.
Bird.
All right. Seth Lugo making a bid for the Mets' fifth rotation spot. He blanked Venezuela for Puerto Rico, Chris Towers.
Woo!
Seth Lugo, 5 1/3 scoreless innings against a really good Venezuela lineup. He also had a .267 ERA last year in 64 innings for the Mets. So he might go to the bullpen, but I don't know that that fifth starter spot is Gazelman's just yet, Chris.
It is.
Okay, so don't pay attention to Seth Lugo right now?
No, I mean, look, if Seth Lugo actually earns the job, I don't think there's near as much upside with him as there is with Gesellman.
No, certainly the strikeouts were much different. Lugo, yeah. 45 strikeouts in 64 innings. And last guy, look, I'm kind of reaching here. Maybe I'm missing somebody, but I have Joey Rickard, Baltimore outfielder. He has 9 walks. He leads spring training in walks. He's a .581 on base percentage. Tore a ligament in his thumb last year, limited him to only 85 games. And I think Rickard right now only hits against lefties. But I also think that there are some pretty underwhelming outfielders in the Orioles outfield right now.
Yeah.
And maybe he's an AL-only guy. Maybe he's a deep five outfielder kind of league
Rickard
guy.
Rickard was someone I was pretty interested in. His plate discipline was really impressive in the minors. And then it didn't really translate at all to the majors. So AL only, he's worth a look.
Yeah. All right. Just want to put some people on the radar here. Anyone else, guys?
No.
Okay. Rankings disputes. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to talk about players that we haven't spoken too much about. Not in all of these cases, but just going forward. So let me give everybody the game plan for the rest of the week. On Tuesday, we're going to recap the position previews, give a quick thought on each position, our strategy, a player we like. You should also check out Scott White's tears on the website, not his, like, tears of you know, not his crying, but, you know, T-I-E-R-S. I will tell you guys in confidence, don't tell anyone, but I've been binge-watching The Office. I've mentioned that, just kind of watching it over again, and I definitely cried. Michael Scott's last episode. Very sad stuff.
I've been rewatching The Office as well.
Well, just don't, when you get to that, you know, get the Kleenex, because it's very sad.
The Office never made me cry.
It's a sad episode. It's a sad episode, especially the Dwight scene. Oh, very sad. And the Jim scene. I can't even talk about it. I plan on doing a live mock draft on Wednesday. Maybe we'll get two parts out of that. And then I'm out of town Friday and the following Monday, so Chris Towers is going to be leading the way, or Heath. I have no idea who's going to be hosting, but somebody will.
You tell us.
Don't leak that beforehand. We want people to think they're getting their normal podcast. They think it's one of us jerks.
Yeah, they'll be fine. But get your brackets filled out. All right, so rankings disputes. In points leagues, Heath has Paul Goldschmidt 9th overall behind Chris Bryant, Josh Donaldson, Manny Machado, and Anthony Rizzo. 9th for Goldschmidt in points leagues. Chris has Goldschmidt 5th overall, ahead of all four of those guys, ahead of Bryant, Donaldson, Machado, and Rizzo. Look, obviously we both love Paul Goldschmidt, but this is pretty significant. One guy's taking him 9th, one guy's taking him 5th. Chris, I'll let you lead off here. You're the high guy on Goldschmidt in points leagues. It's closer in Roto, by the way. What's the discrepancy here?
I'm not sure why Heath hates Paul Goldschmidt. No, I think Paul Goldschmidt is among the first rounders, with probably Donaldson, Altuve, and Trout, the one with the best track record. You go back 4 seasons, the only year that he hasn't had at least 200 runs in RBI combined is 2014 when he got hurt. Walk rate has been above 13% each year. Strikeout rate has never been above 23%. He hits for power. He steals bases. He's a high batting average guy. I don't see what there wouldn't be to love about Paul Goldschmidt. I don't see what the argument for Donaldson over him would be, or Bryant.
Here's my, and I will draft Paul Goldschmidt in the first round, so I do not want this to turn this into Heath hates Paul Goldschmidt. It's not what it is. Here's my question about Paul Goldschmidt that I don't really understand is, did he try to change his approach last year, or did it just change on its own?
Okay.
Because his fly ball percentage, I think you could say plummeted. It was 28.8%. It'd been 34% basically for his whole career. His hard contact rate went down to 37.5, which is still good, but he'd been over 41 for 3 years in a row. And if that had just transferred over to medium contact, I would just think that's some type of discrepancy, and who knows what's hard and what's medium. But his soft contact percentage saw a corresponding jump of 4%. Still very good profile as a hitter. 37% hard contact, 14% soft. You're hitting a lot of line drives. You're going to be good. But it's also a big part of the reason why he hit 24 home runs as opposed to the 33 he hit in 2015, the 36 he hit in 2013. So I do think if he's going to be a top 5 player overall, he's going to be reliant on stealing a lot of bases. I'm skeptical with the regime change and the fact that he's a 29-year-old first baseman that he continues to steal bases, especially at the rate he did last year.
Okay, I will point out Goldschmidt did finish as the number one first baseman in both points and Roto.
Yep.
And steals were a big part of it. Also, walks were a big part of it in points leagues. He walked, I think, 110 times. But, all right, there we go. That's Paul Goldschmidt. In points leagues, and I'm going to do both points and Roto here. In points leagues, Heath has Justin Turner 9th at third base. That's ahead of Adrian Beltre, ahead of Jonathan Villar, Evan Longoria, Michael Franco, Todd Frazier. Justin Turner is his number 9 third baseman. Chris has Justin Turner 14th behind all of those players. Turner is last year he was 12th in points, 14th in Roto. So again, Heath has Turner 9th, Chris has Turner 14th. Heath, you love Justin Turner. Tell us.
See, this is.
I'm just kidding.
This is a guy that I would think Chris would really like because he's one of these guys that changed their swing plane to start hitting more fly balls.
I do like
right?
Justin Turner a lot. I've actually felt like I'm higher on Justin Turner. There's a lot of good third basemen
there
out there.
There are a lot of good third basemen. Most of the guys that you listed there, I have in a very similar position to Turner. But I would expect that he is going to – I wouldn't be surprised if the home run numbers come back down just a little bit next year, but I expect a ton of doubles. A batting average relatively close to 280, 290, bunch of runs in RBI.
Yeah, I think the thing is I've got him I actually just moved him. I moved Todd Frazier down, so Justin Turner's 13th. He's in my top 100, though. Okay. So it's just that third base is ridiculously
stacked.
Am
I the highest in the industry on Turner, I wonder?
I don't know.
Turner's a weird player because he has had basically the same slugging percentage 3 years in a row. 493, 491, 493. But with unbelievably different batting averages. 340, 294, 275.
Yep.
And he has set a career high in home runs 3 years in a row with 7, then 16, then 24.
I think he's become a much more sustainable player based on what he did last year. Yeah. Okay. Upped his hard hit rate, increased his fly ball percentage, made a very natural jump as a power hitter.
Okay. I am just completely average on Justin Turner.
Mm. So I wonder if Chris is the low guy in the industry.
He is not.
No.
Okay, great. Good stuff. Next up, rotisserie rankings. In Roto, Heath has Mark Trumbo as his number 18 outfielder. Chris has Trumbo 24th. So it's not an enormous difference, but it's guys like Polanco, Billy Hamilton, Jose Bautista, Adam Jones, Chris Davis with a K. They're ahead of Trumbo for Chris, behind Trumbo for Heath. So, Chris, why six spots lower on Mark Trumbo than Heath?
Mark Trumbo's been a pretty established guy and a pretty mediocre hitter for such a long time that it's hard for me to buy this one big jump. I think he's probably more of an all or nothing 30 home run guy than a 45 homer guy.
I wrote earlier, and I was lower on Trumbo before I wrote this, but I was writing a piece about can Mark Trumbo repeat what he did in 2016, and the obvious answer is no. I didn't come to the conclusion that he's going to hit 47 home runs again. But I do think with his profile as a hitter, and you look at those three seasons he had in for the Angels, where he hit 29, 32, 34 home runs and was about a 250, 260 hitter two of those years and 230 another. But that type of profile means you're a 37, 38 home run guy in Baltimore. Like, it's a much better hitting environment. His home run to fly ball rate wasn't really that crazy.
Wasn't it like 26%?
24.6, yeah. Considering he's got a 40% hard contact rate. Now, if he goes back to 35%, that probably drops considerably. But I don't see any
it drops anyway. He's not going to hit a quarter of his fly balls out again.
No, but we're not asking to hit 47 home runs.
Sure.
It's whether he's a 37, 38, 39 guy or a 30 guy.
Yeah.
30 seems like a big drop for me. And the thing I like the most is it sounds like he's going to DH. That definitely helps his injury risk.
Well, if Trumbo was a 30 homer guy in the previous home run landscape, he's got to be close to a 40 homer guy if 2017 is anything like 2016, right?
I would set the over under at 37.
See, I think a big part of that, though, is that a lot of hitters started swinging more like him. There's a lot more guys trying to hit the ball in the air. So I think those gains might be overstated for guys that are already approaching the game
He had 47 home runs last year. So.
Yeah, I think he kind of had a fluky season.
All right. And so Trumbo was
below 37.
Yeah, probably.
Trumbo was the number 7 outfielder in points, like, number 6.
I buy Chris Davis as a power hitter more. Chris Davis with a K more than Trumbo.
Okay, let's go on to our next one here. Heath has Lance McCullers 23rd in Roto. Wow. Chris has McCullers 33rd. Scott has McCullers 47th. In points leagues, they're much closer. Heath has him 29th, and Chris has McCullers 32nd. But damn, Heath, 23rd for Lance McCullers.
I would just like him to give me 206 innings of a 3.22 ERA while striking out 10 batters per nine.
Well, that would be pretty nice. But even if he did that with a 1.54 whip like he had last year, I'm not sure he's a top 24. Maybe. Yeah, he'd probably be up there.
Yeah, I see. I think if he, like, that's the reason I use those numbers is because those are his career numbers. Like, he just needs to do what he's done over his career for a full season.
And it is worth noting Heath is the second highest in the industry on Lance McCullers. I have him 35 spots ahead of his ADP. Heath has him 81.
Go out on a limb.
That's fine. I like it. Do you have McCullers ahead of Gerrit Cole?
Scott White hates Lance McCullers.
No, he doesn't. Do you have McCullers ahead of Tanaka?
No. I think right behind.
All right.
I'm not sure. They're right in the same range.
Okay, so would you go you have Tanaka 21st, McCullers 23rd. How about you have McCullers out of Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah.
Christy, you have McCullers out of Kyle Hendricks. You don't.
I have Hendricks higher.
But yeah. I think he kind of wants to have McCullers higher.
I would rather draft McCullers at his price for sure.
Just put McCullers higher. Come
nah.
on. You want to.
At his price, that's the key. Like, nobody is as high on McCullers as you guys are. Which is great, which means people listening
Plenty
to us.
Plenty of people are as high on him as me. Nobody's as high as Heath is.
Well, he's the 43rd pitcher off the board, according to ADP. He's going 172nd overall. So, could get a huge steal there with Lance McCullers.
Yeah, and listen, I don't think he's going to walk 5 batters per 9 again. But I don't think he's going to strike out 11 per 9 either. So, just temper things just a little bit.
I do think the 11 batters per 9 is much more sustainable. He's the type of guy that I think could lead baseball in strikeouts.
I actually wrote in the breakouts column that he was going to be a surprise Cy Young candidate.
I'm moving him up.
Oh, all right. Bold. Moving him up already. So what, into your top 30 or what? Who are you moving Lance McCullers ahead of right now?
I moved him ahead of Hendricks, who I moved down. I moved him ahead of Aaron Sanchez, Jose Quintana, a little bit ahead of Gerrit Cole.
I think it's pretty risky what you guys are doing. I think, like, moving him ahead of Hendricks just seems, wow. Seems
You're
crazy.
Say dumb. I heard the deforming.
No, I it's not dumb. Like, I get it. If they both pitch the same amount of innings, there's a good chance that McCullers is better, but with the injury history, with the wildness, you know, again, 1.54 whip last year. That's high.
I also do think at some point, like, every pitcher's risky.
Yeah.
And I know that's not super helpful, but I don't know. You're talking about grading risk, and I just think at some point you just have to go for upside.
Well, but don't act like Kyle Hendricks has no upside. He's a good pitcher on the best team in baseball. He's
yes.
gonna put up big numbers.
Well, I don't know. He's gonna put up little numbers.
Well, he's gonna put up wins and fantasy points, big fantasy points. Quality starts
and
wins.
Numbers. He's not gonna put up big strikeout numbers.
He's not gonna put up big strikeout numbers on a per inning basis, but if he
even
throws
on an overall basis, he didn't throw enough innings. He struck out, what, like 180 batters last year?
But that's not terrible.
170.
All right, but if he throws 200, how many innings did Hendricks pitch? Like
190.
190. All right, if he gets to 200, you're talking about 180 strikeouts. It's not so bad. Like, there's a very good chance he strikes out more batters than McCullers, because McCullers just has innings issues. Innings issues.
I'm going to take Lance McCullers' total strikeouts over Kyle Hendricks. Let's make a bet.
No.
Okay.
Let's read emails here. I wanted to do more rankings, but I also want to hear from the listeners. Josiah from Mount Joy, Pennsylvania. How does your draft strategy change when you're playing in a head-to-head categories league with K per 9 instead of Ks?
You better get them relievers.
Yeah, it makes relievers even more valuable.
I don't
now
even
you're
know.
Going with 3 ratio stats.
I don't even know why you would take starters in that case unless you had to. Wins would be the only things that they would give you.
Might as well just change it to win-loss.
I hate K per 9.
If you have to take a couple starters, then you might as well just go all relievers and then take a couple of starters that don't really strike anybody out, but will pile up innings, so you don't have to take very many of them.
No way. Why wouldn't you get a guy like McCullers who's going
to
excel?
Because you're going to have an
innings
limit that you have to reach, and he may not help you reach that.
Wow. All right. Next email is from Ryan from Livermore, California. Hey, Ross, Chandler, and Joey. How do you guys feel about Friends?
Ah, from the great show Chums.
I'm probably a little low on Friends compared to the industry, but it doesn't mean I don't like it.
It's a good show. 12-team mixed auction Roto League, regular listener, defending champion. All right. This is our first year using keepers, and he needs help here. He's keeping Trey Turner for $1. Second keeper, would you keep Chris Bryant for $36 or Alex Bregman for $1?
Could you have any tougher a decision to make?
Nice, Chandler.
I think you go Bryant. I know the price disparity is huge, but I think this is one of the things about keeper values is you need some guys who are going to produce $50 in value. Like if you have a team of $2 guys that gives you $10 of value, that's not as valuable, I think, as getting a $36 guy who could give you $50.
I was just reading the rest of the rules, and I agree with Chris. I think the biggest key is the fact that you already have a $1 keeper.
I wouldn't do it. I would keep Bregman for $1 because the rest of the rules, as Heath was saying, is if he wants to keep these guys next year, it's an additional $10. But next year, Turner for 11 and Bregman for 11 might be great. My point is, you keep Turner for one, you keep Bregman for one, spend whatever you want on Chris Bryant.
But you don't know what everybody else is keeping.
Well, how much realistically could Chris Bryant
I guess it's better to look at it this way. Are your chances of getting, let's say Bryant goes for 55 in the auction because everybody has a bunch of cheap keepers.
Right, and you lost $19 on that. Then.
Yeah, you've got 57. How much do you think Bregman's going to go for?
Not 20, but in a keeper league, he'd probably go for what? Close to 15, maybe?
Yeah, I think I'd rather keep Bryant. I think Bryant's going to be more valued in the draft.
Yeah, maybe. But, all right, fine. I'd keep Bregman, but the other two would keep Bryant, so go with them. Stefan from Toronto says, hey, Jack, Juan, and Jimmy. I don't know who that is. I was going to say the Pep Boys, but no, that's Manny. Yeah, I don't know. So here's the question.
Not even close.
You know who this is?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, okay. I think it's wrestling. So Heath, get on that. Just a heads up, you guys and every other American are enunciating Toronto too much. When you say it, you got to make it sound more like Toronto to sound hip with the kids. Speaking of Toronto, it sounds like you're expecting a lot of regression from Aaron Sanchez. The guy is 24 years old, and he is filthy stuff. Sanchez has been working on his changeup with Marco Estrada. It was an effective pitch last season, but he only threw 267 of them. The changeup will help big time against lefties, his biggest weakness last season. I actually think Sanchez will take another leap forward this year, and next year we'll be talking about Aaron Sanchez in the round 5-7 range. What do you think?
I want to see him improve either his strikeout rate or his walk rate. That's the big thing for me. He's got the ground ball rate, but he was just about average in both strikeouts and walks. To take a big step forward, and I think really to just sustain the gains that he made last year, he probably needs to make one more improvement. I think Heath, you've been a little dismissive of Aaron Sanchez
yep.
this season.
Sounds like me.
You know, I don't think he's a 3 ERA pitcher, but he's probably a mid-3s ERA pitcher. And with the type of profile he has as a ground ball pitcher, I think he can rack up innings. The big thing is the giant innings dump last year.
I didn't really hear any of that conversation except for Chris saying that I've been dismissive, and I just agreed with that because I usually am.
Yeah.
Because I figured it out. Jack Morris, Juan Guzman, Jimmy Key from the 92
Ooh.
World Champion Blue Jays.
Toronto Blue Jays, in fact.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah, the innings the innings jump is huge. I mean, the innings jump is about 95 innings.
But
you just don't see that.
We have, let's say, conflicting reports on the risk of the value of the Verducci effect, I think is the way to put it.
You don't start a fight with Adam over this. Adam
no.
is 100%.
Look, there are good things to take away from the Verducci effect, but it's not a golden bullet.
No,
a golden stake.
His
Golden State.
His
I don't think they can hold on to the one seed. San Antonio's charging.
His story last year was not 100% perfect by any means, but Lance McCullers was on his list. Luis Severino was on his list, so he got a couple right. And I'm pretty sure McCullers was on his list. Carlos Martinez was on his list. Did not
honestly,
work out.
I respect what everyone in the industry is doing. And
I'm not. It's not a critique. I would just say that if you did a list of 15 pitchers that were thrown together with no qualifications.
I think
you would
he's
probably,
putting more than that into this.
Right. No.
It was only like 8 pitchers.
But what I'm saying is that pitchers are so inherently risky that if you just did 15 pitchers whose names start with the letter P, you would probably have a pretty high rate of guys failing.
Foods that start with the letter Q.
Who?
Quinoa?
Foods that start with the letter Q. Yeah, quinoa. But you don't know what movie that's from? Wow. It's embarrassing, guys. That is...
Quiche. Yeah, is quiche with a Q?
Quiche. Yes, she did say quiche. That is
Gloria. I like a good quiche.
Gloria on Jeopardy in the movie White Men Can't Jump.
Oh, yeah.
Foods that start with the letter Q. That was her specialty.
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie. That's it for the show today. Back tomorrow, we're going to recap the position previews. Get ready for a live draft, I think, on Wednesday. I'll be asking for your Twitter help there. So, yeah, stay alert for that. And goodbye.